rainy, wet night. It is wet, isn't it, still? Is that right? Let me just see. Let's go to the screen. There you go. Is it wet? Who likes the wet? It looks raining. No one likes raining.
Oh, I do.
Do you? Good on you. You sleep better at night when it rains, eh? Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. Guys, keep that open, that page open. Those two texts, chapter 3 from verse 7, keep that open. Also, I want to encourage you to use these talkback forms. Excuse me. Write your name on it. Tick the box that's relevant to you. A phone number, an email, whatever. Grab a pencil from the center. I don't have a problem with you getting up, get a drink, get some food, you know, draw on these things. Just keep engaged. That helps me. That feeds to me that you're in it. Write a question down, comment, anything you think, hey, look, Dave, I don't agree with that, or Dave, I think that's really weird. Can you explain it more? I'll write back to you, I hope. Cool, and make sure you have a pen, yeah? Start with a story. Girl meets a guy, and they do something nice together. Okay, they go out somewhere nice, they try to do something together that's nice, okay? To figure out if she likes him. Okay? So they go out, then she learns a few things about him, asks him a few questions, finds a bit of his personality, and a love begins to grow for her. However, she then has another opportunity to date another guy to see if she likes him. So, you know, does the same thing, goes out with him. He's a bit different, okay? Different to the first guy she was hanging out with. But he actually brought her some flowers. That's pretty nice, isn't it, right? Second guy brought her flowers, first guy. Just a funny guy. Soon enough, she has another opportunity to date another guy. And another guy. And another guy. Doing all these really great things with other guys. You know, she's got to decide which one she's going to spend the rest of her life with. Which one is it going to be? Sound familiar? Yeah, it's The Bachelorette. Reality TV show where the woman has the big decision to make, okay? The big decision to make. Americans have Bachelorette, don't they? Yeah, it's a US version, isn't it? Yeah. To spend who she's going to spend the rest of her life with, all right? To share her life experiences, to perhaps even start a family, you know, to build that dream life that she wanted with this dream, one dream man. And Ruth, okay, previously a married woman, now widowed, in the process of making a significant decision of her life. But, you know, how would she have known that she was making the right decision about Boaz? How would she know that? Because she too was desiring a dream life of being settled with someone, being married again, having a family in the promised land. How is she going to know if she's going to make the right decision? How does she know if her decision was going to be aligned to God's plan for her life? And I guess when it comes to making decisions about our lives, how do we know that we're making the right decision? How can we be sure the things that we're acting on and the decisions we're making will help us achieve our future dreams? How can we know that whatever we do is going to be aligned with what God has planned for us, what God wants us to do for our lives? And the answers, they're not always so neat, are they? They're not so clean cut. Looking retrospectively, looking back on your life, it appears that, you know, it all goes to plan for Ruth, as you just read today. I'm going to learn from these last two chapters of Ruth, okay, that in God's kindness, our actions and decisions allow us to live out our dreams for a better future. Because the ultimate dream for these guys, okay, is obviously to be married to each other, to be together. And we're going to see how that kind of unfolds in God's kindness to both of them and their lives. So quickly, let's kind of recap the story, what we've been doing for the last 2 weeks in our series in the book of Ruth, Rebuilding Shattered Dreams. Naomi and her daughter-in-law, Ruth, okay, arrived and returned from Moab to the promised land after living abroad. And during this time, Naomi's husband and also both her sons had died. One of those sons was married to Ruth. And from chapter 1, flip back if you need to, we read that Naomi and Ruth, okay, were moved from Moab to the promised land because the harvest in the promised land was so great. It broke the severity of the famine, okay? That's why they came back. And so Ruth has stood by, time and time again, by her mother-in-law, Naomi. has stood by her in the midst of such great loss and tragedy in both of their lives. And so in chapter 2, last week, Ruth's life takes a positive turn, okay, for the better, where she lands a job working in a harvest field, okay, and she meets a man of standing, a man kind of wealth who follows God and walks with God. And this man shows extreme kindness, extreme generosity to both Ruth and Boaz. Ruth and Naomi, and this man's name is Boaz. And so from today, this is kind of the next step for Ruth and Naomi in rebuilding their shattered dreams. And so we're going to first look at why and how Ruth pursues her dream of being married to Boaz. Why and how Ruth pursues her dream of being married to Boaz. And the first reason is why she chases this dream is because she wants to fulfill her mother-in-law's dream of someone to carry on the family line or the family name. In the Bachelorette TV show, we don't get to see how much the producers or the writers or even the TV show host kind of influence the decisions of the contestants and of the Bachelorette herself, do we? Right? We only see her interact with the other guys, and that's pretty much it, right? But we can assume that they are influential, okay? Because they want good ratings, don't they? Good television, right? You've got to influence those people. And also, they want to see a good outcome for the Bachelorette. But I don't know if you know, right? Do you know who that person is on the right? Anyone know? Sophie Monk. Does anyone know who Sophie Monk is? Maybe, yeah, who is she? Do you know?
Like some famous person.
she's a singer. She used to be in a girl group, singing group called Bardo. You don't know that? Google it, like Spotify. It's really bad. Anyway, check it out. But this woman, she's a single woman, right? Okay, look, she's a single woman, guys. Okay, right? She had a string of broken relationships. Okay, she's a famous person, looking for love, looking for someone to start a family with. All right. So, do you know who influenced her decision to be on the show for this year? Who would have done that, Derek? Do you know? Her mother. Her mother influenced her to do that, right? Her mum, all right, I don't know how she did it, but she does it because she's holding a rose there, right? She planted the idea in her head, okay, in her daughter's mind, which encouraged her to go on the show. Okay, obviously shooting it right now, it's going to be, I don't know, are the ads out yet for The Bachelorette? I don't know. Hopefully soon, okay, right? She's on the show. You're going to see it happen, okay? She wants the opportunity to fulfill her dreams. So she wants to go on the show, okay? Way different to my mum, right? Who wanted me to live at home for the rest of my life, okay? Filling her dreams, okay? On the show. Now, if you remember back in chapter 1, right? Naomi is a bitter woman, okay? She changed her name from pleasant to bitter, which is Mara in the Hebrew here, because she lost her husband and a son that was married to Ruth. And so this is devastating, right? Really sad. Because Naomi's dream was to see her son have more sons or more grandchildren. And if you look back on page 7 here, chapter 2, verse 22 here, okay, when Naomi learned, right, that Ruth was working in Boaz's field, she plants an idea in Ruth's head, okay, to stay working in Boaz's field. Not because it was only because it was safe to, but also to draw these kind of two people together, right, to make them potentially, you know, have a romance, right? You know, Naomi's a little matchmaker, okay? And so this is how the story begins today in chapter 3, okay? Let me take it from, let's read it for it. I'll read it for us in chapter 3, verse 1 there on page 7. Have a look. I'm going to read it. One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, my daughter, I must find a home for you where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with his women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on your perfume, get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he's lying. Then go, uncover his feet and lie down. He'll tell you what to do. Naomi wants the best for Ruth and for her future, okay? In verse 1, it means, you know, getting a man, right? Getting married, because he'll provide for her. He'll take care of her. And so Naomi plays this like matchmaker role, okay, in telling Ruth on where Boaz is, where to meet him in the middle of the night after he's finished his meal when he's asleep. She advises Ruth to look her best, to smell her best, okay? So she can feel her best when she meets Boaz. You know, without kind of Naomi telling Ruth explicitly what's going to happen, Ruth knows that Naomi approved of Boaz, right? Naomi thought he was a good guy for Ruth because he'd been an extremely kind and generous person to them. And Ruth knows that this would be a way forward to carrying on Naomi's family line and dream of grandkids. Which leads on to the next reason why Ruth kind of pursues this dream of being married to Boaz, which is because she actually personally really wanted to be married to Boaz, okay? Chapter 3, verse 5, have a look. Look at how Ruth responds to Naomi's advice. I'll do whatever you say, answered Ruth. Ruth answered, sorry. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother told her to do. You know, it appears like from here, okay, just on the surface, Ruth is kind of blindly compliant, okay, to Naomi's advice. She's just going to just take it and just run with it, right? And will do anything for it. But remember, okay, remember about Ruth. This is about Ruth's character. Remember that she had voluntarily stood by or even clung to her mother-in-law in the midst of the most difficult times, right? Of all the loss that was happening in their life. She had plenty of opportunities to leave, but she stands by her mother-in-law. She chose to work in the fields, right, to provide for Naomi and herself, and continued to do that in Boaz's field. And now Ruth, okay, is choosing to pursue this dream of being with Boaz by taking Naomi's advice, by listening to her. But does she actually do exactly what her mother-in-law tells her to do? Have a look at verse 9, right? Instead of waiting for Boaz to tell Ruth what to do, Ruth instead takes the initiative and blurts out Boaz is the guardian redeemer and that he should get married to her. And we're going to look at what, you know, the role of the guardian redeemer is a bit later in a few minutes, but just know that here, it's remarkable that Ruth has, in a sense, proposed to Boaz. Ruth has proposed to Boaz. Okay, I'm going to put that on the table. She really wants this guy. At this point of Ruth's life, she could kind of be parallel to the bachelorette, okay? She's definitely pursuing Boaz, right? As for a committed, intimate relationship. She wants to obviously be with Boaz because in verse 10, right, Boaz mentions that she hasn't pursued other younger men or other richer men or poorer men, okay? But specifically, Boaz. And all this was done in the middle of the night, where a man and a woman alone together could have led to something more controversial. So if people found out that these two people were together, she was alone with Boaz in the middle of the night, you know, what could I have thought? And we read about her intentions was only to propose. And we know that she was a God-fearing woman, a woman of noble character. So for Ruth, this was totally worth pursuing, right? So that she could marry the man of her dreams. There's no sex scandal here, okay? Nothing like that. Then in chapter 3, Ruth's attraction to Boaz is affirmed even more because of his great generosity and care for providing for Ruth and Naomi with more barley, right? Which are potentially perceived as a gift from, you know, from a future son-in-law to a future mother-in-law, okay, in verse 17. So for Ruth, this plan that Naomi had planted in her mind, you know, it's a pretty complicated plot, right? That could have went a million different ways, okay? Heaps of different ways it could have ended up. And Ruth pursues Boaz, okay, to fulfill her mother-in-law's dreams of a future family successor, but also to pursue her own personal dream of being married to Boaz. And in verse 18, Ruth now just needed to wait, okay? She needed to wait and rely on Boaz to fulfill her side of the proposal so they could live out this dream together. And this leads to the second part of our story, okay, where we're going to look at why and how Boaz pursues his dream of being married to Ruth. And I think the first reason why Boaz pursues his dream is because he's actually just flattered that he's being pursued by Ruth, okay, which prompts him to pursue a marriage to her. You can read in chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. Have a look there on page 8. That's what it is. Boaz, you know, he was completely not expecting the plan that Ruth was hatching, okay? You get the feeling of ambiguity here, okay? Or surprise through the use of the pronouns of he and man and woman, as you read in verse 8 here. Yeah, it says here, I'm just going to read it out. It says, in the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. Who are you? He asked. Okay, once Ruth identifies herself, okay, you can tell that Boaz, he's flattered, right? He's slightly surprised, but flattered at the same time. Look at what he says in verse 10, okay? He knows that Ruth could have gone for any other man that she met out in the fields or in the town, a younger guy, a richer guy, but she was chasing him. She was after only Boaz. What's more, this woman, okay, she was of noble character. Noble character, right? Ruth was a follower of God and was known in the town among the Israelites as an honourable and respectable person. Okay? Someone who was perceived previously, remember last week, as a foreigner, as an outsider, now considered someone who was of noble character. So knowing this, it makes sense that Boaz thought that Ruth's proposal was a great act of kindness towards him. It leads to the next thing in chapter 4, which is that he acts on his own personal dream of wanting to be married to Ruth and confirms that he is the guardian redeemer. And he does this, Boaz does this, as you maybe were reading or maybe flicking through, but reading that last bit. But even before that, we're going to look at that more closely. He does it quite shrewdly. He does it quite shrewdly in order to get to marry Ruth. What is a guardian redeemer, you ask? What is a guardian redeemer? Well, if you look in chapter 2, verse 1, okay, go back. That's on page 5, okay? And also in verse 20, flip over that page. Boaz, he's a relative of Elimelech, Naomi's late husband. So in Israelite tradition or custom, the guardian redeemer was a man who would carry on the family bloodline, the name, and inherit the estate of the deceased relative. And this happens because if there was no son born, okay, to that deceased relative, then this other relative would have to come in and try to, you know, create a son, you know, a successor to carry on that name. And it's not a guarantee that they'll create a son, right? As you know, you never know what you're going to get when you become pregnant and you don't know. You could get a girl or a guy, you don't know, right? It's no guarantees, or even have kids at all, right? Because Ruth didn't even have a kid with her first husband. But another thing about the guardian redeemer, that's my kid, by the way, Reuben, if you didn't know that. First thing, you need a successor, son. The second thing about the guardian redeemer, all right, is you need to be wealthy. You need to be wealthy, okay? Boaz, described as a man, remember in chapter 2, as a man of standing, okay? Prominent rich man. Boaz owned a field, had a bumper crop, needed to be harvested. He had people working for him, okay? Rich guy, right? A lot of money. Perhaps, you know, marrying someone like Donald Trump or Prince Frederick wouldn't be so bad after all, right? Guys? Yeah? These men basically take care of your needs, right? Look after you. You know, guys, wouldn't that be nice? Rich guy? Would that be a thing? No? How good's that look? Is that a pout? I'm not sure if that's a pout. I'm not sure. It's a weird pick. I thought I'd put it up. It's a cool pick. But seriously, okay, to become a guardian redeemer, okay, there's pressure to have a son, a successor, and it's a major financial undertaking. Two things, right? Need to have a son. It's a major financial undertaking. And I'm not talking about the financial undertaking stuff. It's not about, you know, the level of high maintenance that Ruth was or these women are, okay? That's not what that's about, okay? And in this final chapter, okay, Boaz explains publicly what it takes to be a guardian redeemer. And in that bottom paragraph, okay, if you look at chapter 4, that bottom paragraph there of page 9, okay, he makes an effort to meet with the competing guardian redeemer because there's a closer relative to Elimelech than Boaz, right? Someone who's more eligible. So what I want you to do is quickly, on your table groups, grab a pencil or whatever you're going to do, is to have a chat about why being a guardian redeemer will be a major financial undertaking. Yeah? Does that make a question? Why would you need a lot of money to be a guardian redeemer? Go. And maybe the associated risks behind it. Yeah. Go. Have a look. Have a read the text, chapter 4. Have a chat. Okay, guys, let's bring it together. Okay, question is why being a guardian redeemer would be a major financial undertaking? Maybe start with this table first. Just start us off with one idea.
So probably taking on a whole bunch of land, maybe.
Yeah. So purchasing land is an issue. Yep. Yep. That's that.
And the associated financial risks.
Yep. So there's risks and responsibilities in purchasing land. Mm-hmm. Yep. Thanks. Yep. Okay. So that's one thing. Yep. On the back. Anything else?
Okay.
Yeah, go. Yeah. What?
I'm kind of thinking that
it wasn't super then.
Son would be now Ruth's ex-husband's line, and so all the wealth would be continuing his lineage.
Yeah.
Like
potentially. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. But so he kind of inherits that. Yeah. Yeah. So yep.
Kingsman Redeemer kind of is losing a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. Because he has to kind of provide for Elimelech's side, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's helpful. Yep. Anything else on this table here in front of us here? Anything different? Same? Clarifications?
Kind of spending your resources because you have all your own land, property, whatever.
Yep.
And then adding on all the other stuff, but you might not necessarily have, like, workers or whatever to handle all of it.
Yeah. So you got to have other resources to kind of help take on all that other stuff. Yep. Anything else on this table? No?
Well,
did he? Well, no.
Which was thinking about the guardian redeemer in the place of restoring a family.
Yeah. Okay. So the role of guardian needing to restore a family back on their feet, so to speak, back to a functioning household. Yeah. Cool. Okay, that's great, guys. Yeah, good. Very good. Okay, so you kind of get the picture, right? What's at stake here for Boaz? Okay, and Boaz, okay, he's aware of this, okay? I'm pretty sure he'd be aware as you read chapter 4. Skim through it again as I'm talking here, but I'm pretty sure he's aware. And I'm pretty sure he's extremely clever in making his competitor believe that the closer guardian redeemer believe that he could redeem Naomi's and Ruth's estate, Elimelech's estate, in verse 4 as a guardian redeemer. But, okay, if you flip over the page, Boaz does wait, there's more to this package, all right? Boaz throws in the line in verse 5, okay? I'll quickly read it. Then Boaz said, on the day that you buy the land from Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. So for someone to be successful in being a guardian redeemer, okay, you need to acquire the husband's widow as well, who is Naomi, and their children, In this case, Ruth. Yeah, which is kind of what we talked about here. The family, you absorb the family. Obviously, this is a significant responsibility, right? Significant. And in verse 6 here, okay, check it out. The companion guardian, right, does a kind of double take. Because he initially says, yeah, I'll do it. Okay, and then he does a double take here in verse 6 and retracts his decision to be the guardian redeemer and offers it to Boaz. If Boaz were to marry Ruth, there was a chance that he wouldn't have a son, perhaps, right? But it also was a major financial undertaking for him. Okay, there was risk in that. But Boaz was aware of all these risks. He was aware of the cost. And he knew it was totally worth it. It was worth it. He wanted to be married to Ruth because of her great kindness towards him. And read that he deliberately, in the way, he confirms himself as a guardian redeemer. But there's one kind of vital element that is missing from this story, as we've read, okay? And it's to do with, where does God fit in? Where does God fit in, okay? He's not really mentioned here, okay? So where does he fit in? It seems that God has been very active throughout the story, right? Even though he hasn't been mentioned by name or what he was doing. In chapter 2, okay, cast your mind back to last week if you were here, when Naomi's told about how generous Boaz was towards Ruth, she reflects on God's kindness on them, towards them. And that it was so kind of almost coincidental that Ruth will be gleaning barley in a guardian redeemer's field. Then in chapter 3 today, the kindness that Ruth shows to Boaz is reminiscent to when they first met each other, okay? We explored last week that Ruth was another blessing by God to Boaz, or from God to Boaz, rather than a burden or an inconvenience to him. This is how he perceives it. And the fact that Ruth was attracted to Boaz was even perceived as well as a huge blessing from God to Boaz. Finally, in chapter 4 as well today, the elders and the people are witnesses, okay, to Boaz becoming the guardian redeemer. They see it happen publicly. And they make mention in verse 12 of a very special family line, okay, whom Boaz comes from and who it would kind of lead to. Look on page 11, flip over to page 11, okay, and you see from verse 18 on that Perez is the forefather of Boaz, and that eventually Boaz will be the great-grandfather of King David. King David was someone who made Israel become great and very prosperous nation, basically a superpower in the ancient world. All right. Under God, David made Israel's dreams become a reality, a prosperous and strong nation. But unfortunately, Israel don't remain that way. They don't remain in this great, prosperous way. And God continues to work through David's royal family line, which came from Boaz, to bring about a better leader, a better person who would bring blessing and peace to those who would believe in Jesus Christ, King Jesus. Check out the excerpts of Jesus' family from Matthew's Gospel here, okay? From verse 2, Abraham, okay, the forefather of Boaz, fathered Isaac, Isaac fathered Jacob, Jacob fathered Judah and his brothers. Then skip down to Salmon, fathered Boaz by Rahab. Boaz fathered Obed by Ruth, and Obed had a son named Jesse. He fathered Jesse. And then in verse 6, Jesse fathered King David, and then David fathered Solomon. Okay, Solomon then brought King Israel into the next phase of its history. And then if you skip down further, if you've got a Bible or a Bible app, you can check out in Matthew's Gospel in verse 16, Jacob, same family line, Jacob fathered Joseph, the husband of Mary. He gave birth to Jesus, who is called the Messiah, okay? The chosen king. So this love story in Ruth, okay, it appears trivial in a moment in history, but actually shows us that God uses the faithfulness of ordinary people to do great things. He uses the faithfulness of ordinary people to do great things. God's ultimate dream has become reality in bringing hope and redemption to all humanity, not just a select nation, Israel. It extends to us, to people here today. This is definitely God's ultimate dream. Are you part of this ultimate dream of God's? Because if you're not, perhaps today is an opportunity to act on that, to accept God's kindness to you by coming to know God personally through the person of Jesus. And if you want to know more about that today, speak to me, speak to someone who's been up here, speak to Sam, okay? We want to talk to you about it. To finish up, you know, it's hard to know whether your actions now, today, will contribute to achieving your future dreams and whether God is working through your actions to bring about those dreams. It's actually really hard, okay, to see. I know what it's like to. It's hard to see how God is working our lives today, isn't it? It's really hard for us. But it's easy for us to look retrospectively at how God is working through our lives, and particularly through this story here in Ruth, okay, we know it ends on a high, and in Ruth's pursuit of her dreams of marrying Boaz, but also how Boaz pursues his dream of marrying Ruth. And we could see how God was working through both of them at this particular time. And we know that God is active, right? Because when we reflect retrospectively, we can see God's kindness being shown on people's lives, blessing them, caring for them, and leading them to personally know him. Is this something that you reflect upon, okay, that you often think about to encourage others around you, the people around you, that God is working and is active in people's lives today? Have you acted on accepting God's kindness towards you by pursuing and following his ultimate dream for a better future and knowing the person of Jesus Christ? I believe accepting Jesus is the ultimate action and decision that you could ever do in your life. And all those other actions and decisions you make will stem from that major decision. I think we need to trust in God in our everyday actions, whatever we're doing day to day, because God will work through any good or any bad that happens, whatever decision we make. Remember, we might have our own desires and dreams for this life, but in God's kindness, our actions and decisions allow us to live our dreams for a better future. I'm going to finish there, but thought, is it time for questions? Is it time for questions? Anyone ask a question?
Yep.
Cool. I'll try and answer your questions, but any questions? Any questions? Yeah.
Naomi and Boaz, and I don't know how to phrase it better, but like divine intervention or, I don't know, God working in their lives.
Yeah. So like,
what does coincidence have to, how does that play into things?
Yeah, so the question is, how do you differentiate between coincidence and maybe fate? Is that a good word? Or something that is deliberate, planned by God? Yeah. Yeah, so I believe, my personal conviction is everything has been planned by God, I think. Some people think there's an end point, yep, this is where you're going to land. Everything that happens in between, whatever ups and downs and lefts and rights and whatever circles and roundabouts you do, you'll end there. I'm kind of like, yeah, I'm pretty open to that. For this story, I don't think it's coincidence. I think it was God's plan for them to meet. I find it, because as I reflected on reading this, like there are so many things that could have happened that could have caused them not to meet, or something could happen that, you know, this marriage may not even have seen the light of day. So it's not coincidence that she walked into a field and happened to be Boaz. I think it was planned. She just didn't know it at the time. Yeah. So how do I differentiate between that? Yeah, at the moment, you don't know. But retrospectively, for sure, you can see. Yeah.
In retrospect.
Yeah.
Which is like another question.
Yeah.
In terms of like when we look back on our own lives, sometimes you look at things retrospectively and you sort of want it to be a certain way. So you look back on it and you kind of say, oh yeah, of course that was that.
Because
that's your bias. So as a Christian, I have a bias towards saying, oh yeah, that happened because God wanted it to happen,
yeah,
or God planned it that way. I'm not entirely sure that if I approach someone who maybe isn't a Christian, that they would just quickly accept that as a as an answer.
Yeah.
How would you talk to someone about that?
Yeah, if they said, if they asked me, oh, is everything coincidence or random? Or if it's like, well, you're here today because God has chosen you.
Looking back at history and you're just picking things to apply and say that,
yeah,
that was God's plan. And
yeah,
selectively maybe leaving out some other stuff.
Yeah, on the side. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's also very complicated. I don't know how I would approach that. I think in terms of like looking in my own personal growth with God, for sure, I probably could look retrospectively about how much I've grown to know God. And so this is God's plan, how much we've seen God use these two people to enact his plan. But in terms of other life stuff, yeah, I guess that's more subjective, I suppose. Yeah. And how do you know? I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to explain. I have to think a bit more about that. Thanks. Fiona? Okay, so the question is, do I think God plans something is the same as God wanting it to happen? Yeah. can you just explain what plans in your perspective?
One of the things that you said is that this was God's plan.
Yes.
And so does that mean, is it the same thing as saying God wants it?
This particular, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think obviously it's not, if it's, he wouldn't have planned it if it was contrary to his character.
But because some people might draw the line and say, well, God wanted those two men to die.
Yeah.
Because that's part of his plan that they die, so he wanted it.
Yeah, yeah. Which happens often in throughout the Old Testament, yeah. How God would choose one over the other as well, that's another thing. Yeah. That. So, yeah. Yep. Because we need to see the bigger picture too about salvation from God. That's that part. But also, yeah, there's these little bit moments where how's the family line of Jesus via Boaz, via Abraham, Boaz, you know, those guys, how's that going to work? And it often takes a turn that we don't expect. And does that mean that was out of God's plan? Maybe, but yeah, it's complicated. That's a hard one too. Yeah, I think God knows. I think he knows at least. He has to know that it was going to be that way. Whether he planned it that way, I don't know. I'm not God. Yeah, because then. So like, yeah, it's like, that's so complicated, isn't it? That's so hard. Yeah. So like how out of choosing David, for example, David wasn't the eldest, he was actually the youngest. So why does God choose the youngest, which happens often in the Old Testament? He chooses the younger guy, the smaller guy, the weaker guy to carry on his family line, rather than the stronger guy, the eldest, the firstborn. It happens often. And I think it's kind of to help us understand, well, he's in control and he's got perspective. He knows it's going to happen. Yeah. You can ask God later. I don't know. Yeah. Sorry if I've answered that properly. But yeah, I think he knows at least. I think he knows. Does anyone else have any thoughts on this? Because I'm just announcing I don't know the answer, but it's very hard. Yeah.
Just because somebody just asked me this question.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
Wait. Can you repeat your question again?
The question is, sorry. Can I jump in there? Yeah. You go.
I guess the question is generally, is that the same as saying that God wants something to happen if it's in his plan?
I think an argument for that, like some people could say, like, if you look at this, we're like, why did this specific thing, like why did this specific instance of suffering happen, like how could God want that to happen?
Yeah.
But then I think, like, I think it comes down to being like our human understanding and us not being able to see in that point of suffering that God can actually work through suffering and can work for his good. Like, I'm not saying that I 100% think that just because it's God's plan that God wants it to happen, but I think that our human understanding is limited in that perspective, and I think that, like, God knows overall, like, how he's working. Because it does say in all things God works for the good of those who love him. So, in that retrospect, I think yes.
Yeah, we can't forget the fact that the world has sin, the world has darkness, the world has evil. And
yeah.
It's not from God.
Yeah.
But he still uses situations created by sin and evil for
yeah.
the good of the plan overall. So maybe, I mean, God didn't want both of the sons to die, but
yeah.
because it happened, he can still use the situation for his plan. So did he want the guys to die? Maybe not, but
yeah.
did he want the line that led to Jesus to continue through Ruth?
Of course,
obviously.
Yeah. It's also remarkable that because Ruth's a Moabite, obviously a foreigner, and she gets converted to Yahweh, to following the Lord. And I think her being in the land allows her to worship God more closely, even more, perhaps. So is that a thing? Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. It's pretty intense. Anyway, I've got to stop there. Someone's going to come up and pray. Oh, Aiden, yeah.